Hi, everybody. This is Joanne Morrill bringing you a very special edition of Fine Arts Forum this afternoon. I have with me in the studio one of the most interesting people you're ever going to meet on Fine Arts Forum. His name is Ethan Weiner, and he is not only a musician, but he's a writer, he's an audio engineer, he's a computer programmer, and lots of other things, too, all interrelated. He's here with me today because he's going to be giving a concert with the sponsored by the Danbury Music Center on May 2nd at Ives Concert Hall. And of course, we're going to talk a lot more about that too. Ethan, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
Before we get started, your main instrument is cello.
It is now. I played the electric guitar and rock and roll and electric bass for many, many years.
All right, that was what I was going to ask, if there were other instruments. But I think that since the focus is cello, and this is going to be a concert where you play cello, why don't we have a little bit of music first? Let's listen to a little bit of a recording of Ethan's cello concerto. This is a concerto in one movement featuring Ethan as the cello soloist. And we're going to talk a little more about the orchestra a little later. So you just title it Cello Concerto. Is it in a key or an opus?
In A minor.
It's the Cello Concerto in E minor.
A minor.
I'm sorry, A minor. You just said A minor. I beg your pardon. A minor. And this is by Ethan Weiner, who is the cello soloist. Let's listen to some of that now.
Thank you.
We've been listening to music by Ethan Weiner, as performed by Ethan Weiner. He's here with me in the studio this afternoon to talk about a concert that's coming up on Sunday, May 2nd at 3 o'clock at Ives Concert Hall. Now, Ives Concert Hall is on the West Side Campus. No, that's the West Side,
downtown campus,
right. The Midtown Campus is on the other side, isn't it? What do they call the Midtown Campus?
I think that's the same.
Anyway, this is White Street, folks, and it's this is where the concert is going to take place at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on May 2nd. This is a free concert sponsored by the Danbury Music Center. Ethan, tell us about that. Who were the orchestral players in that recording?
Well, it's an interesting story about this recording. I wrote this over, it took me about 9 months working, a few hours every day. And I have a computerized MIDI setup with many synthesizers all hooked up to a computer. And I that's how I compose. I play a little on the keyboard. I will try out ideas with the synthesizers. I can actually play back little snippets of recordings called samples of real orchestra instruments. It doesn't sound as good as real orchestra instruments. The articulation isn't as good, but you can get a pretty good idea of what it's going to sound like.
Yes.
So over those pretty much exactly 9 months, I developed this and wrote all the parts, orchestrated, tried things. I could, with having it in the computer, it's very easy to say, well, gee, how would this sound an octave higher?
Oh, boy, yeah.
Or gee, this sounds nice on the flutes, but what if I had the oboe play it?
Boy, you could, years ago, I mean, this is really amazing because composers never could do that. They didn't have the benefit of it.
Well, that's right. And you had to have either hear it in your head if you were very experienced,
right,
or you had to try to beg, borrow, and get favors from people to, gee, would you guys run through this so
yes.
I can hear what it sounds
yeah.
like? So I did a complete realization, if you will, on with the computerized sequencer. And then got many friends that I know from, I play in three different orchestras, local orchestras. So I had the best of the amateurs that I play with and a few professionals, some who owed me favors or were willing to work cheap.
You heard that here, you guys. Okay.
In 12 separate recording sessions, I replaced almost all of the synthesizers. Still synthesized are the percussion. The timpani is synthesizers. And that's less important with the percussion instruments than with the expressive instruments like woodwinds and strings. So I had the first session, I had 8 violin players in my home studio. And I have a pretty fancy home studio.
Oh,
I had this room
nice.
Built for me. It's acoustically correct, if you will, with the walls are not parallel. This has high ceilings, a hardwood floor, and I have professional recording equipment. So I had 8 violin players. I think it took about 4 hours we did the first violins. Then we doubled that so that when played together, it was actually like 16 players. Then we did the second violins and then doubled that.
The miracle of technology.
The miracle of technology.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And then in separate sessions over the next month or so, I had 4 viola players, 6 cello players, and all the woodwinds. I mean, it was a huge, huge project, and there was an awful lot of editing. But simplified with modern technology.
Modern technology. You haven't actually given a name to this orchestra.
I call it Ethan Weiner and his virtual orchestra.
Okay, that's that virtual orchestra. You heard that here too, first, folks. That's wonderful. Now I understand. The Danbury Symphony did a piece of yours a few weeks ago with puppets and all kinds of. It was a wonderful concert, from what I heard. The piece was called "A Day in the Life of a Cat Named Bear."
That's my cat.
That's your
Bear.
Cat.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And how did that concert go? I bet it was very well received.
It was.
Yes.
This was actually the fourth time that piece has been performed.
Good.
I've been fortunate enough to have other orchestras interested enough in it to play it. This was a great performance, and my friend Robert Rogers, who owns the Robert Rogers Puppet Company, put together a puppet show and had a really nice cat that looked much like my cat Bear. And he had mice, he had fish, he had a lot of things.
These were puppets.
These were all puppets, and Robert and one of his assistants, the two of them together, did the show. But I wrote this piece. It's a collection of short, about 1 minute, I called it musical vignettes, each describing musically one aspect of Bear's day. And Bear is a very happy, very well-fed cat.
From the name, the name implies that he's probably a large cat.
He is a big fellow, yes.
Yes. Yeah, that's cute. It does give you a kind of an image when you name a cat something like that.
Yes.
Okay. Now, I'd like to go back and look at all the other. I want to tell my listeners that in reading just even a blurb on some of the things you've done, There are so many things, and your abilities, your talents, your interests are many faceted. I guess we could say that you're a very eclectic person. I don't know that eclectic applies to people, but usually it applies to an art form. But at any rate, tell us a little bit more about how you started out. Let's go back a little bit chronologically. You came from a musical family.
My mother was.
Your mother was.
Had a lot of musical ability. Mm-hmm. We always had a piano in the house. Mm-hmm. We always had, well, back then, of course, a record player.
Yes, and you had music playing, classical music, good music playing.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, how was it that you took a turn into the rock medium? Was that teenage stuff, or
yeah,
how
probably
did you get it? I mean, with all the classical music influence, you went like that.
Well,
you
made it sort of a I never stopped enjoying and appreciating classical music. I played the violin for a few years, starting in fourth grade, and I'm glad I did that. And also, we had a piano. I never took formal piano lessons, but my mother had a number of piano books, not so much method books and practice etudes, but you know, easy, simple pieces,
sure.
And I would work on those and learn those. When I was 16, I had a friend who had a guitar and went over to his place and said, "Oh, gee, that's neat. I've always wanted to know how to play that."
Yes.
And he showed me a few chords, and I really, really liked it.
Yes.
And spent a lot of time on that.
And you probably found out the guitar is a little bit easier than the piano and some of the other instruments, is it not?
Well, being good on any instrument
is
very difficult. Mm-hmm. But the guitar is certainly easier than the violin or the instruments without frets.
The gratification comes sooner, I'd say, on a guitar, maybe.
Right, and actually the piano is much like that. Yeah, if you go to a piano and you push the key, it sounds nice.
It does, yes,
if it's in
true.
Tune.
Yeah.
With a violin or a clarinet or a bassoon, it doesn't sound nice the first time you blow into it. So the guitar is, if you can tune it, which is also an issue, it does immediately sound a little better. But I really enjoyed it, and I practiced a lot. I mean, I really spent a lot of time every day.
And so then you got into playing rock music, doing gigs and things around locally and local clubs.
Yeah, local bands. Mm-hmm. I was somewhere playing at a gig. Was probably in my early 20s when I realized that I didn't want to be doing this when I was 60.
Mm-hmm.
This was no way to make a living. And I was always interested in audio and electronics. And so I pursued a career in those fields and worked for a number of electronics companies. I lived in Norwalk most of my life.
And when you went to college at Bridgeport, University of Bridgeport, you got into technology there. I mean, what was your...
Was that
a music study there?
It was. I was 28 when I went to school.
Yeah.
I already had a career. I was happy doing what I was doing with electronics and playing music still all the time and building. I built a lot of equipment, recording equipment. I built a synthesizer.
Mm-hmm. But you had not gone to school for
that, per se.
You had gone into it and learned on the job, so to speak?
That's correct. And I had never gone to college, and I just wanted to know what the college experience was like.
Yeah.
So I took all the courses needed to get a degree in music. Except for academics. I didn't take history, social studies, a foreign language, and actually did well with it. I was fortunate enough that my employer, when I worked at that time at an electronics company, was nice enough to let me work part-time for those 2 years so that I could do that.
That's a good opportunity. So then, you came out of Bridgeport, you were still working in electronics, now you have this background in music, and something else changes, I guess, or wasn't the change immediate? Or was it gradual?
Well, I was always interested in audio and recording. And in fact, one of the things that was most appealing about that and what really got me interested in tape recorders early on was I was very aware that some days you play well, some days you don't play so well.
Isn't that the truth?
And, you know, so you'd learn a new song and have a friend come over and say, "Oh, let me show you this." And all of a sudden, I did it better yesterday.
And it was really that
I think got me interested in the idea of doing that. That's one of the things I enjoy about writing also, as opposed to live public speaking.
Mm-hmm.
You get a chance to review, edit, sit on it, sleep on it, think about it. So I was always interested in that. So I built a recording studio right around 1970, a real recording studio with a friend in his barn attached to his parents' house. When I say a real recording studio, it was a four-track studio, but we had professional-grade equipment. I built the mixing console. But it was a real studio in that it had a dividing wall with glass between the control room where the engineers were and you could hear, and the recording room where the musicians were.
I understand, sure. Something like what we have here.
Yes, that's right.
All right. All right, now, were there any other sharp turns, or was this all kind of different elements of you, the person, you, the musician, you, the brain, you, the everybody that came together. I mean, where are you now? Other than you're doing cello, you're practicing cello, and you're going to do this. You're going to do this concert in May, about 2 or 3 weeks from now. And where are you headed?
Well, let me just answer your first question when you said the...
Yeah, it's a bunch of questions there.
Yeah,
yes.
Well, the next sharp turn was in 1983. Mm-hmm. I had built my third recording studio, and this was a major facility in Norwalk, and had really pretty much gotten tired of it and was having problems with one of my partners. So I just left the business. I had gotten interested in computers, had bought an Apple II. This was just before the IBM PC came out. Had an Apple II, learned how to program it, and really, really liked that. So I did computer consulting for several years and eventually doing work for the New York Stock Exchange and Chase Manhattan Bank. I had some good customers. And it was during that time I saved enough money to start a software company. And during the period I was doing recording professionally, I started writing for recording magazines, professional recording magazines, mostly how-to articles.
On the technical side.
On the technical sides of things. I've always been a consumerist. And you'd see, you know, some piece of equipment for $3,000. You could build that for $20 worth of parts in like two afternoons. So I would show how to build things. And that was always of great interest to me. And so when I started doing computers, I started in programming. I approached a number of programming magazines, eventually becoming a contributing editor for PC Magazine, where I worked for a number of years from home on my own time, not in their offices in
but
New York.
Now, here's a question. You say you started a software company. Now, that means, did you design the software and then market it yourself? I mean,
That's right, yes.
This is there's a lot to that. I knew some people who did that who were really struggling under trying to market it, trying to keep it going, and trying to design the software. I mean, that's a lot.
Well, I targeted a very small niche market. It's harder to come out with something that's going to compete against Microsoft Word or Adobe Illustrator or some of the large established companies. I targeted programmers. So what I actually sold were little pieces of programs, things that were difficult for many programmers to write, or maybe they could do it, but it would take them 6 weeks. And my first product was a $69 package, so it was very economical. If that would save somebody 3-4 weeks, and plus I would get a whole bunch of other stuff.
It was really worth it.
It was very, very popular.
So it's not only being able to market it, but it's knowing what the demand is or what
correct.
The need is,
that's
right?
Correct.
That's
right. And it involves a lot of phone calls. You call the magazine and say, I have this product. I'm sure your readers would like to see a review of it. Can I send it to you? And talking it up, and that's a large part of
And
you
have to
that.
Be prepared for the fact that they're going to say, oh, this is one more person trying to sell something, and I hope that they'll notice that this is something different or something special. Yeah,
that's right.
I guess it's all marketing one way or another. It's like when we were talking off mic before about becoming a composer. What you do is, you know, you get in with the composers and you spend time and you go to all the concerts and you're seen and you get to know the people, and that's how it's marketing.
It's self-promotion.
Oh, and the more shameless, the better, evidently, you know, from what
I've
seen. I don't know about computers, but
you don't want to be obnoxious.
Oh, no. But I know lots of people who have become very obnoxious who really get the work done. They get the job done.
Well, that's the bottom line. All the PR in the world won't help you if you can't actually deliver.
That's right. That's true.
So I did that. Well, I did that for six years and really got burned out. I was working 11 and a half hour days at least. I got up every morning at 4 o'clock, and by quarter of five, I was working. And you can get almost a whole day's work done before the phone starts ringing at 9.
Yeah.
And during that time, I also wrote two programming books. One was a bestseller, and did very well with that. So after it was just about 6 years, 6.5 years, I had just had enough. I was just burned out. And I sold the business to my partner and retired. I'd taken a partner on during partway through the course of this. And retired and got back into music. I'd been out of it for a while, and a lot of new things had come out, most notably MIDI, this capability we were talking about before, where you can hook up to a computer all these synthesizers in a controlled environment, and it makes it very easy to write. So I bought a computer, professional loudspeakers, and did acoustic treatment, professional acoustic treatment, so you could really hear. So I could really hear, you know, what I was mixing.
Yes.
And got back into it and started writing pieces. And it was, I think, 2 months after I retired, I said, you know, I want to learn the cello. I had...
Why the cello?
Well, I had always liked the cello. And I remember it was in the late 60s, I got a recording of Rostropovich and I forget the violinist, doing the Brahms Double Concerto. Mm-hmm. And I was so taken by his playing, especially the opening cadenza. I played that piece over and over and over, and I loved that so much. And again, I had always enjoyed classical music, but the cello physically is similar in size, in shape, to an electric guitar or electric bass. Mm-hmm. The neck is similar. Of course, it doesn't have frets. So I rented one before I went out and spent a lot of money buying a nice one, because I wasn't going to just buy a cheap one. So I rented one for 3 months, and I think I had it back to them in 5 weeks, because I'd already
bought it. You were that sure?
Yeah. I was sure after 2 weeks, actually, and started looking for a... a good professional quality instrument.
Okay. Now, you're coaching, you coach with someone on the cello?
I do. At this point, I have three different people I take lessons from that are all pros and very good. Kate Dillingham, Stephen Thomas, and Andy Salvo. Mm-hmm. And but I take a lesson from each of them every couple of months, alternating. At this point, I know what to do. I know how to do it. And really what's needed is practice.
It's the practice. Yes, yeah. It's knowing what's needed and being aware of all of that cannot be a substitute for the actual practice that has to, the repetition and all of that goes into
hours,
it.
Hours and hours. So I started exactly 7 years ago. Yeah. And in the beginning, I was practicing 3-4 hours every day. And the last couple of years, it's been more down like an hour and a half, 2 hours. So I do play in three orchestras, a trio, a piano trio, a string quartet, and a duo with the pianist. Mm-hmm. And those are every single week. So I have a lot of things going on. Mm-hmm. So I get a lot of playing, even if I don't set aside separate time to practice.
Right. And then there's time where you have to learn the stuff you're doing, too. I mean, you don't just go in and sight read, to some of those stuff. Yeah. So, it's a very involved thing. So music is a biggie right now for you.
Yeah.
It is. Okay, then let me get back to that other question. Where do you go from here? What is your idea? What is your vision? Where do you want to be when you're 60?
Well, that's a very good question. I thought that I wanted to be a cello soloist. And I don't mean an internationally touring professional, but, at least play with area orchestras. I think that at this point, it's starting so late, I don't know if that's a reality. But I certainly enjoy composing, though it's a lot of work, and sometimes it's, I wonder if it's...
Oh, it's a grind. It's not only a lot of work, it's a grind. Let's face it, it can be.
So I don't know. I still do some programming, and I still assist past customers, people who... and this was 7 years ago that I sold my business, but there are still people who only I can help because of the different turns in direction the new owners of the company have taken it. And I still enjoy that. It's once every couple months somebody will have a problem for me that I'll actually have to spend an hour programming to solve. And I like that. I still like that. So I'm not ruling that out, maybe even getting back into the software business in some limited sense.
And in the meantime, I suppose composing, trying to create more music, more pieces, that's... another intention of yours.
In writing, I have a lot of other interests, even besides what we've talked about. I have a lot of interest in animal rights.
Good for you.
So I'd like to... I'm not quite sure what I can do. It's such a... it's such a big issue, but maybe doing some writing, letters to the editor. I've been a thorn in the side of many newspapers.
Good for you.
For over the years in different towns I've lived in.
Yeah, it's a pet cause of mine, too. And other than, every once in a while giving money when I can afford it, I don't know what else I can do. Mm-hmm. I guess if you have the time, you can get involved actively with some of these groups, but it's not easy.
I have been helping, actually, just lately, helping collect some petitions for a particular issue. But I'm also interested in, as I mentioned before, consumer issues, and there's a lot that can be written about that.
Yes.
And I also have a great interest in the inefficiency of the traffic control lights, traffic lights as they are today.
Not in New Milford.
There's not much in New Milford. No,
I know.
It's all around the country, but especially in Connecticut, it's just disgraceful how badly they're set up. Mm-hmm. And I wrote an op-ed piece for the Danbury News Times a couple of years ago.
Good.
About that. So I have a lot of interests. Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess your day is busy. You probably don't take too many naps, I would think.
No.
I'd like for us to I'd like to remind my listeners now that the concert that we're talking about, where we're going to hear the, where we will hear Ethan Winer perform the cello concerto, is coming up on Sunday, May 2nd at 3 o'clock in the afternoon at Ives Concert Hall on White Street. That's the White Street campus, folks, of Western Connecticut State University. And to that end, why don't we hear a little more of that recording now, okay? Here is Ethan Winer performing another segment of his cello concerto. Yes, we've had to interrupt that beautiful performance. We've been listening to cellist Ethan Winer performing his cello concerto. We heard a short segment of it there. The entire work is going to be featured at the concert on Sunday, May 2nd at 3 o'clock in the afternoon at Ives Concert Hall. That's sponsored by the Danbury Music Center, and if you want information, call them at 748-1716. Ethan Winer is with me here, and I want to thank you. It's been a very interesting experience getting to know someone who's involved in so many interesting things and doing so well at all of them. And I think it's wonderful that we have a live composer playing his own music at this concert. I think this is an asset to the community.
Yeah. Well, thank you. It was certainly an awful lot of fun to do.
Well, we'll be looking forward to the concert. And once again, folks, that concert is Sunday, May 2nd at 3 o'clock in the afternoon at Ives Hall at the White Street campus of Western Connecticut State University. I'm Joanne Morrill for Fine Arts Forum.